How wonderful we are. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. How wonderful we are. In the Discovery Magazine for this month of May, articles are there telling about the universe. Is the universe built for life? And habitable universes, and genesis of stars, and black holes, cosmic consciousness, and all that sort of thing. And in it, it brings about a number of interesting possibilities. But what this biocentrism does of bringing about the thought that mankind is quite important is that man's consciousness is more or less, according to science, the creator of all that exists. Now, that seems a little far-fetched, a little far out, but considering all the possibilities, it's not really so far out. When you consider what's going on and how it's going on, you realize that these things are quite reasonable and quite probable. Actually, instead of assuming a reality that predates life and even creates it, we propose a biocentric picture of reality, they write, for from this point of view, life, particularly consciousness, creates the universe, and the universe could not exist without us. That's a rather preposterous, presumptuous, and overwhelming comment, but in truth, it's not. In the philosophy of the University of Healing, we teach, I am God, God I am, and that I am the creator of my universe, I am the creator of my world, I am the creator of all. And what is it that we talk about that is the creator of all? Is that this brain-operated human being that we are? Is that the consciousness that we are? Or is it the life that we are? Is it the life that is immortal, the life that is eternal, the life that creates all things? Think about these things. They're rather profound and rather exciting. And they go on to say here, the final option is biocentrism, which holds that the universe is created by life and not the other way around. This is an explanation for and extension of the participatory anthropic principle described by physicist John Wheeler, a disciple of Einstein's, who coined the terms wormhole and black hole. Which holds that the universe is created by life and not the other way around. We, in our finite thinking, in our finite awareness, want to say that the human being is the consciousness, and the human being is the creator, and the human being is the allness. And when we do that, we're thinking entirely too small. We're thinking on too small a concept of the allness. Just letting our mind spread across the 13.7 billion years that the universe that we are existing in existed, that before that it was but a speck in the nothingness of the allness. For us to conceive of such a thing is rather impossible. And then the scientists go on to say that there are out there wormholes, there are out there black holes, and in fact many black holes. And in our Milky Way alone, there are hundreds and thousands and millions of black holes. And the scientists like to presume that these black holes lead to other universes, and that they're not only leading to them, but they're the creator of these other universes, that they drift off into their apparent nothingness and create another universe. They call them daughter universes. How interesting. How interesting that we look at these things and we say they are beyond our imagination, yet it's only our imagination that gives them credulity, that it's only our imagination that gives them life and substance and possibility. We are indeed the creators. But it's not our finite minds that are the creator. It's our infinite brain. It's our infinite mind. It's our infinite beingness that is the creator. We have in our physical bodies a brain, and we call that brain mind oftentimes. And that is quite a misnomer to call the brain the mind. For the brain is but a portion of the mind. A brain only reflects what the mind is doing and how the mind is acting. And the mind is the life principle. And so, as scientists are coming to believe that the mind principle, or life, and consciousness is all that is, and it has created everything. They would like to take it away from the realm of saying there's a God, because a God is more humanistic than it is eternalistic, immortal. We want to make God over in our image, and whenever we do that, we limit God. And we apparently find it a great thrill and a great pleasure to limit God. But why do we want to do that when we don't have to? Why not just say that there is a life that not creates in the past, that not creates in the future? We say, but look out there, see the Milky Way, look at the telescopes and see all the things that are out there. See all the stars and all the galaxies and all the possibilities. See all the suns and the planets and the possible life forms that there might be on other planets in other areas. Think about those things. Well, as the scientists are confirming and reconfirming and reconfirming, all time and space are right here. There is no otherness, even though we look out there and we see what we think are planets, and we see, well, look at here, all these other minds, all these other brains are looking out there and seeing them too. There must be something to that. They must already exist. And who gave them previous existence? Well, the scientists want to take us back from that multifaceted appearance to a biocentric period of looking right within ourselves, within this human body, this brain that we have. And it is our channel to the infinite life awareness, the life source. It is our channel to the mind, the infinite mind that dwells in, through, and as, and is the only thing that is. And when we come upon that, we want to immediately call it God. We want to immediately call it the creative power of the universe, the force that... And of course, every word that we use, every phrase that we use to describe what we term as God, is what the scientists call the absolute, what the scientists call living in the now, what the scientists call living in the spaceless, timeless, limitlessness of all. That's why science has laid a claim to the possible thought. Any thought that is sought affects all. Any wind that blows concerns the universe. Any activity that takes place anywhere affects activity everywhere. Now, how can that be? Well, that is because all is one. And it's not a matter that there is an otherness outside there, but that all is one. And that no action can ever take place in the mind of man, in the consciousness of man, in the absolute, in the allness, in the isness, at any one point or any all point, that doesn't affect the consciousness and the infinite creative mind, the infinite life essence that exists everywhere in everything. And yet there is nowhere. We want to say that it's the allness, but what is there to be all of? There is only one. There is no otherness. There is no allness outside of us. How interesting it is. How interesting it is that we always want to create an otherness, because what we have created with our consciousness, with our life force, with our absolute awareness, we feel is so profound that surely it is not something we can understand. And this is what the philosophers and the physicists have been grappling with for a millennium. And it will go on forevermore. It'll go on until the consciousness, the awareness, the expression of how life is related to all of the world and how life is related to all of our thinking, until it is realized that there is no time, there is no space, there is only now. And all activity takes place in the now. All activity takes place in the is. All life exists in the now. All life exists in the is. There is no otherness. There is no activity going on anywhere in the universe except in our own consciousness, in our own thinking, in our own mind, in our own inner awareness. And what a glorious and wonderful concept that is. For the scientists, instead of ruling out God as it is defined, are defining the universe as God has been defined. But there's one little thing that the scientists have included, which humanity has not. The universe, the concept of the allness, does not have a human-centric concept. They call it a biocentric because that's where the beginning of these thoughts take place. But truly, it reaches into an absolute awareness. But absolute awareness and absolute consciousness and absolute creativity is something beyond the realm of most minds, of most brains. And so, therefore, they try to whittle it down into words and concepts and ideas that are understandable to them, understandable to us, to me. But the moment I can train myself to think in the now, train myself to think all time is here and all space is here, all isness is here. I am the is. I am the all. I am the life principle. I am God. I am these things. The moment I can train myself to think in that realm, then all that is me right now. All that is whoever is thinking. And I am the thinker, and I am the thought. I am the life principle, and I am the expression of that life principle through consciousness. And the only things that exist are what I have in my consciousness at this moment, what I give my life force to. And nothing exists outside of this moment. Nothing exists outside of this consciousness, nothing exists outside, away, separately from me. Now that's a rather bold statement. But me truly is the universal me. Me is the universal mind. Me is the universal one. Me is life. Me is that which is. Me is the now. And as I think of me being now, I have a totally different concept of what's going on in the world. And rather than being confused by all of the things going on in the human world, I rather, when I think of the human world, think of it in a balance, in a harmony, in a oneness. That's the reason that I so greatly delight in mathematics. I so greatly delight in music. I so greatly delight in the harmony and the pattern of oneness that these two areas give to me. These two areas make all reasonable and right in the universe. And I'm never happier than when I come to the realization that that is me. That is who I am. That's where I'm going. That's where my values are. That's what's important to me. It's exciting, isn't it? There's only four experiments to solve the mystery of the universe. The first two give us little to work with from the scientific perspective. And one is simply to argue for incredible coincidence. Another is to say God did it, which explains nothing, even if it is true. The third explanation invokes a concept called the anthropomorphic principle, first articulated by Cambridge astrophysicist Brandon Carter in 1973. The principle holds that we must find the right conditions for life in our universe, because if such life did not exist, we would not be here to find those conditions. Some cosmologists have tried to wed the anthropomorphic principle with the recent theories that suggest our universe is just one of a vast multitude of universes, each with its own physical laws. Through sheer numbers, then, it would not be surprising that one of the universes would have the right qualities for life. But so far, there is no direct evidence whatsoever for other universes. Yes, the final option is biocentrism, which holds that the universe is created by life and not the other way around. And so it is. Life is the allness, the isness, the oneness, the absolute, and it creates all. And most interestingly, I am life. Each consciousness is life, and each consciousness creates its own expression or understanding of all that is. It doesn't make it separate. It only makes it one. But that is a profound concept. Too grand to perceive, too grand to probe, too grand to accept, however well and however true it is. So I say to you, think on these things and delight in them and know them and know that that's all that really matters and that's all that really is.